Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by a very special guest on today's show. We had him on around this time last year. A lot has changed since then, Evan. You are now, the founder and CEO, co-founder and CEO of Establish the Run. It's doing very well. Congrats on your growth as well over on the site, Evan, and appreciate coming on.
Yeah, thanks, man, and thanks so much for having me on as well.
Yeah, no problem. We're going to hit on a lot of stuff today with you, Evan. And the first one I want to hit on with you is about Chris Ballard and how important this offseason is going to be for him, because Andrew Luck, all of a sudden, that bombshell happened in August. No franchise quarterback now on the Colts roster currently. What do you – if you had Chris Ballard's hat on for this offseason, and arguably the most important offseason we've seen for the Colts in the last two decades because they have Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, and the saddle of quarterback, what in the world are you doing here, Evan? What would you do in Chris Ballard's shoes?
Well – that is a very complicated question that I feel like I can answer. But I just wanted to say first that Chris Ballard, you know, and I've gone to Indy for the combine the last couple of years, and dude, I cannot tell you a GM in the NFL that is more respected than Chris Ballard among NFL types. Everyone considers him not only to be a really good leader, but also like a really good person. And, you know, he is the guy who I think among NFL types is credited with building the Chiefs more so than certainly more so than John Dorsey, and more so than even Brett Veach, who is their current GM and was around for all that. And, Andy Reid obviously is the main guy there, but Chris Ballard, you know, played a really big hand in that. And I think that he's been conservative with the way that he has approached building the Colts. And I think that has frustrated some of the fan base. But I think that he has an eye on the future, that he's a long-term strategist as opposed to a short-term game guy. And I really think that the Colts organization is in good hands. I know that this past season was pretty it was frustrating. It was frustrating, even as an outsider and a guy who is kind of rooting for the Colts, because I root for teams that are smart. You know, I at this point, like, I don't really have, you know, any attachment to any NFL team from a fan base standpoint. I like to see teams that are smart, and I think that the Colts are smart, and I think that you could see that show up in what they did in 2019. But I don't think it's quite as visible as if they had a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, definitely agree there. And losing Andrew Luck was obviously a gigantic loss.
Obviously, yeah.
How do you think the Colts responded to that, Evan? Going 7-9, they obviously had the 5-2 hot start, but I think once teams got more tape on Jacoby Brissett, obviously the knee injury hurt a little bit, but Jacoby Brissett's not a franchise quarterback, it seems like, through 16-game sample size, and I think the Colts realized that too. So how do you think they responded from Luck's retirement, kind of staying afloat there around 500, but also how Jacoby Brissett handled, and what do you think his future could be?
I think the Colts, as you know, from an organizational standpoint, did the best that they possibly could. I think they actually did a really good job of it. They, you know, they threw some support, but not too much support behind Jacoby Brissett. They tried to, manage their offense to account for Jacoby Brissett's weaknesses and strengths. I think that from like a fan base standpoint, so I've been at this some like 12 or 13 years, and I've gotten a real good feel for fan bases, I think. And I've always thought very highly of the Colts fan base. And they're very measured people. They don't typically get too up or too down. You criticize their team objectively. The Colts fans are much better than most fan bases at reacting to that criticism with their own sense of objectivity. I mean, if we were to rank fan bases, I think the Colts are easily top 10, maybe even top 5. You know, I think that the fans inside the stadium reacted extremely poorly to learning on their phones or on Twitter or whatever to Andrew Luck's retirement. You remember that day that they booed him off the field. It was kind of embarrassing, but, you know, they didn't have all the information and it was just an emotional reaction. So I think that that is forgivable. I think people are just going to forget that. I think the Colts really do have a great, smart fan base. And I think that that was just a bad, small sample moment. And I think that the way that the Colts organization as a whole reacted to it was about as professional as it possibly could get.
when you look at Jacoby Brissett, Evan, the 7-game splits before his injury, they were 5-2, and of course, riding high momentum there. He looked like a top 15 quarterback just based off the box scores there. You look at the advanced metrics too, but over the last 9 games, he fell off a cliff. He was a bottom 5 quarterback consistently in almost all advanced metrics. Chris Ballard said at his post end of season press conference that he was talking about Jacoby Brissett being in the middle of that as far as the first 7 weeks and the last 9 weeks. That's probably who he is. Who do you think Jacoby Brissett is as a starting quarterback?
So I think that Jacoby Brissett, when you consider where he was drafted, the fact that a smart organization like the Patriots traded him for a number 3/number 4 receiver like Philip Dorsett, the fact that another smart organization like the Colts has gone 11-19 with Jacoby Brissett as their starter, and the way that they used him primarily as a game manager this past year, I think we know what Jacoby Brissett probably is. And that's one of the best backups in the league, but not a quality starter, you know, not a franchise quarterback. And I think that when you watch his tape, Jacoby Brissett doesn't throw with enough anticipation. I think he holds onto the ball too long. I think that he at times make his offensive line look worse than it actually is. I think that his aggressiveness throwing the football downfield comes and goes. I don't think that he elevates teammates, and he's not what I would consider a comfortable quarterback in the pocket. I think that Frank Reich really adjusted his offense to account for that. I think that Frank Reich knows exactly what Jacoby Brissett is. But I would bet that behind closed doors that Frank Reich does not see Jacoby as a long-term solution for the Colts and for this offense.
It seems like to me, I've listened to the Move the Sticks podcast with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. Mm-hmm. They talk a lot about quarterbacks. You either are the tractor that pushes the trailer along, or you need weapons around you. You're sort of the caboose on the back of the train, so to say. I think it's fair to say if you want to build around Jacoby Brissett, I mean, you need a lot of weapons, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that you need an almost perfect situation because you want him to be getting the ball out quickly and getting the ball out quickly to playmakers that can make plays, because he's not necessarily going to be the playmaker.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. And we'll have to see, of course, what happens to this Colts offseason because they can go many ways at the quarterback spot. Let me ask you about the veteran options of free agency. If they do go out and maybe kick the tires, and let's say a Philip Rivers, I know you mentioned this on your podcast before. What's your opinions on Philip Rivers and the Colts there? I know there's connections with Frank Reich there from the previous days and Nick Sirianni, the former offensive coordinator, but does it really make sense on paper for this Colts team to go and do that?
So I've done a lot of work with Warren Sharp of Sharp Football Analysis. We've written 2 books together. And I think that one concept that we agree upon is that teams playing with franchise quarterbacks on rookie contracts are at a distinct advantage. That's probably the single biggest competitive advantage in all of pro football. The Colts were able to experience that for, 3 years with Andrew Luck. So, and, you know, at the same time, I'm still a decent supporter of the Colts going after Philip Rivers, which has obviously been a heavily rumored connection. But I think that that would come on a short-term contract. I think that would be a 1 or 2 year deal where they're paying him around $25 million a year. The Colts, of course, can pay for all of this because they have the second most cap space in the entire league. The cap goes up every year. So cap space is not really even an obstacle here. So they can go for Rivers as their bridge quarterback and then use that 13th pick on a quarterback or even trade up. And the Colts can definitely trade up. I mean, they did not get any compensatory picks, but they have 4 picks inside the top 75. They have that Redskins second round pick, which is, I think, 34th overall. And was just a complete robbery. We knew that at the time, and it's, you know, even more evident now. So there is a realistic way, I think, for the Colts to get Philip Rivers, draft a quality first-round quarterback, also maintain Jacoby Brissett because he's not that expensive, and then just wage a big competition in camp. I really believe the Colts have set themselves up to be choosers and not beggars.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up there. And I like the Rivers option, especially if you go quarterback at 13, like a Jordan Love or Justin Herbert. I know in your mock draft you did on Twitter, you had Justin Herbert over Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. What, do you think either of those guys make sense, especially if they go the veteran route in free agency and maybe have a mentor behind Rivers for a year or two, either one of those guys?
Yeah, I think either one does. I mean, you know, I think at the end of the day, like Jordan Love and Justin Herbert are both going to be first-round draft picks. You know, the hit rate for first-round quarterbacks over the last decade is around 30%, or a little bit above 30%, under 40%, but between 30 and 40%. So, you know, there's no guarantees here. But I do think that the Colts at some point are going to have to shoot their shot. And I think this could very well be the year. I know that I feel like there's a push in Indy for them to take Jordan Love. And, you know, maybe that's on the assumption that – or maybe that's based on mock drafts. I don't know. It could also be on the assumption that Justin Herbert is going to go, like, number six to the Chargers, which is definitely possible. But I think that the Colts definitely need to come out of this thing with, you know, a young quarterback that can challenge for playing time, whether it be versus only Jacoby Brissett, whether it be versus Jacoby Brissett and Phillip Rivers.
This is an interesting scenario. I haven't brought much on the show yet, Evan, but I might as well ask you because I feel like it's a good topic to ask you about. It's about Tua Tagovailoa. We've talked a lot about these quarterbacks. Are the Colts kind of a secret team? Maybe if Tua does clear his medical, it seems like he's on a fast track to doing that. His pro day will be next month. Are the Colts kind of a team waiting in the weeds with all those that draft ammo they have? Maybe like you mentioned, three picks in the top 44, four in the top 75, all their future picks in place. The Dolphins have been mentioned with two of the Chargers. Do you think the Colts make sense in that? Maybe they're the one mystery team that could really risk it all for two. I think it makes an awful lot of sense if he clears.
Yes. Yes. At the same time, I think that, you know, the ammo that we're talking about, I think it's decent. It's above average across the league, but it's not dominant ammo. And I think they would probably have to dip into future classes to try to get up there to get Tua. And I'm not sure that that's something that Ballard would be willing to do. I mean, look, he's been aggressive. He's also been what people would, you know, call very, very conservative. I mean, he's been very willing to move around and, you know, shake things up. And he's one of the most interesting and I think innovative GMs that there is in the NFL so far. But I don't know. That would cost a lot, dude. That would cost a lot for him to try to get from 13 into the top five to go get Tua.
Yeah, it would cost an awful lot, probably multiple first-round picks, I imagine. And one more quarterback option we'll hit with you before we go on to our next topic about the biggest needs for this team is maybe a free agent option. We saw the Titans go after Ryan Tannehill via trade, but do you think there's any way the Colts see what the Titans did this offseason? They had a guy in place behind Marcus Mariota and Ryan Tannehill, who if Mariota failed, they had someone they thought was confident enough to step up and do that. Do you think the Colts could go a Titans type of route in free agency where they maybe trade for an Andy Dalton or they sign a guy like Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston and say, this could be our Ryan Tannehill, Jacoby Brissett flops?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, the free agent market is really like, I mean, at the quarterback position, we've never seen a free agent market like this. We've never seen a free agent market as inundated with potentially quality starters or, you know, even guys like Marcus Mariota, who, you know, is very young, on down to Phillip Rivers, who is very established, but is obviously like at the end of his NFL career. And, you know, there's like seven or eight guys like that. And the Colts are very much in the quarterback market. So yeah, there's a lot of different routes that they could go, and they have so much money. And they do, and they, you know, they're not like the Dolphins. They're not loaded with draft capital, but they definitely are above average in terms of draft capital. And so they're going to be one of the most interesting. And I think they want to compete, man. I don't think they want to take another year where, you know, they're kind of just, you know, hoping to maybe sneak into the playoffs. Like, I think they want to go for it, and I think they should. I mean, they have an excellent coaching staff. They have an excellent front office. You know, Matt Eberflus could become a head coach as soon as next year. I think it's time for them to go for it.
Yeah, I think this window is now, especially if they do go after a Phillip Rivers type quarterback, a 2-year push all in for a Super Bowl would be make a lot of sense in that scenario. But I know quarterback is obviously the biggest need for this Colts team, Evan, but what else really stands out for this team that they have to address this offseason with all that money and a lot of draft capital?
Yeah. So I think that shoring up left tackle is a big deal, and that could be done as easily as just, you know, re-signing Anthony Costanzo, but his talk about retirement is worrisome. You know, that to me suggests that he is very much year to year at this stage of his career. But I really think you want to maintain that front five core, because I think that offensive line is just, over the last couple of years, just, it's awesome. You know, that O-line is your bread and butter at this point. I think you definitely need more talent at tight end. I don't think that Ebron is coming back. I think that, they've kind of severed ties with him. I think that Jack Doyle is better as a number two tight end, and they eventually could get to a number one. I think they need more talent at wide receiver. I think that, Paris Campbell has a ton of potential, but we haven't seen it yet. Devin Funchess is a free agent. T.Y. Hilton is maybe on the back nine, probably on the back nine of his career. Zach Pascal stepped up and had some great games for the Colts this past season, but, I would prefer to enter the season with him as my number four. And then I think the needs throughout the defense are obvious. You need more pass rush. You need more pass coverage players. I love what Matt Eberflus has done with the talent he's been given, but I think the defense has a lot of room for growth.
Yeah, definitely agree there. I think a lot of spots on this team are going to be addressed via free agency in the draft, and Ballard's going to spend a lot of that cash, I imagine. But as far as Ballard's philosophy, Evan, he's mentioned multiple times he wants to build from the inside out as far as going in the trenches. We've seen it often in the draft with guys like Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith early on. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a chance, or what's your overall thoughts, I guess, Evan, on the philosophy of Chris Ballard's in place of building from the inside out? Do you like that philosophy?
Building from the inside out. So I think that this has been an ongoing conversation among like NFL scouting and personnel types. And I'm not so sure that I don't know. I don't know if like he has really even, put that into place. Like, I mean, has he, do you think that he's really implemented that philosophy, like building inside out? I mean, I don't know. He's, he used the second round pick on Kamiko Ture. He has, they put a lot into T.Y. Hilton. On defense, they paid Pierre Desir. They drafted Malik Hooker pretty early. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that they're just trying to get good players. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Darius Leonard pick has worked out exceptionally well. They have Kenny Moore, who's one of the most underrated slot corners in the NFL. I don't know. I just think they've tried to just get good players, man.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just because, I mentioned that to you because like you mentioned, Kamoko Ture, second round pick, Quentin Nelson, mm-hmm. six overall, Braden Smith, Tyquan Lewis, other guys to try to draft and maybe do it in that sense. But maybe more of a general question to you to add on to that point, Evan. Would you prefer, if you're a GM, to surround your team with an elite playmaking group, or would you rather just invest in the offensive line pretty heavily and have a guy sit back in the pocket for five, six seconds at a time without getting touched?
Evan, like, that's a really difficult question. It just depends on from team to team. If I have a young quarterback, I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
I would not do what the Jets have done. And I think what the Jets have done is put him behind a bad offensive line multiple years in a row, not really, invested into a lot of the skill position player, or like invested into the wrong skill position player positions. Like Le'Veon Bell, put his back up against the wall from a defensive standpoint. Like, that would be the entirely wrong way to approach building around a young quarterback. If you have a veteran quarterback, I think you could deal with that a little bit more, it just totally depends on it. Evan, like, I think it really comes down to the quarterback. Like, you make your decisions based on the quarterback that you have. And the Colts don't necessarily have an established quarterback right now. I think that and I think that Frank Reich showed you that, he was going to try to limit their pass attempts. He was going to try to make it an offense that was centered around Marlon Mack, who had a bunch of awesome games and looked really good at times. And, centering it around an offensive line that was, you know, one of the best in the league, and they could play two tight end sets, and, you know, they didn't have T.Y. Hilton for a lot of the year. So they were very smart about dictating the way that they were going to play offense around the personnel that they had. And that makes sense to you and I. You know, you'd be surprised around the league, like, how that doesn't happen that often.
I think it's, like you mentioned, I think it's a good place to go with the quarterback. And I think Andrew Luck, when you had him in place, building on a lead offensive line for a guy who was injury prone in the first part of his career, I think made an awful lot of sense. And without Luck in place, who knows what happens for this Colts team at that spot and how they want to build the rest of their team out. But I think an interesting topic that Chris Bauer brought up at his combine press conference, Evan, was about the locker room being ready to spin on a free agent, as far as he feels the locker room is ready to handle a big name free agent. So if I had you in the GM spot, Evan, who is the first call you'd make at the first moment of free agency if you're looking for a big fish free agent? I've mentioned on the show Jadeveon Clowney. I think he makes an awful lot of sense as a guy who could be the Jabal Sheard replacement, be kind of like a maxed out version of Sheard. Any other options you think that makes sense?
See, to me, like, Jadeveon Clowney – and I'm with you, like, from a personnel standpoint, he does make sense because, I mean, he fits, you know, he fits on paper. But I think that the Colts are very much hell-bent on building, like, a culture. And I'm not sure that Jadeveon Clowney, who's going to cost a ton of money, and is not going to get 12 sacks. He's never. I don't think he's ever had a double-digit sacks, even in his career. I think that he wouldn't necessarily fit. For me, like, as far as the Colts, like, I think that because they have enough talent, they have enough in-home talent. They have enough talent that is just now about to hit the unrestricted free agent market. Just continue to re-sign those guys. Bring back Anthony Costanzo. You know, I think that if you're looking for a pass rush, like, I think what they did with Justin Houston last year was perfect. And Justin Houston worked out perfectly for them. Like, dude, like, their deficiencies this past year were at the quarterback position. They need to find a franchise quarterback. And I think that that is what's going to get them – you know, potentially over the top. I don't know if Philip Rivers is the answer. I feel like I know that Jacoby Brissett is not the answer, although I think that he could get them to 8-8. But that's not where you want to be, man. You do not want to be at 8-8 in the NFL, especially with all the talent that they've assembled and all the assets that they've assembled. They're really a smartly run team. And I think you need to be aiming higher.
I definitely agree. Quarterback is where I think they need to address this. I maybe even double down, Evan. I mean, I think you brought up earlier in the show. It's not like you're in the camp of maybe you go after Phil Burris and you draft quarterback 13.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, because again, you know, and I've written books with Warren Sharp about this, you know, and this is one of our main features. Ideally, you want to get your end game is to get to having a franchise quarterback on a rookie deal. And you have, like, you know, at least a 4-year window, if not a 5-year window. And in that 4 or 5-year window, I think you can compete for multiple championships. And, you know, taking Philip Rivers and, you know, signing Philip Rivers and also, which is very feasible with all the money that they have, and drafting Jordan Love or Justin Herbert, you know, is a very, very, reasonable and rational potentiality. And I think the Colts are in position to do that. And again, your end game, you want to get to a position where your franchise quarterback is on his rookie deal. You can buy anyone that you want, and you just put a ton of talent around him.
Closing out the show, Evan, with the final few questions. Appreciate the time as always, man. Where would you rank the Colts as far as the most intriguing teams in the offseason this year? As far, I mean, the Dolphins are up there, of course, with all the money and draft picks they have. The Colts are certainly up there too. Maybe the Chargers with their quarterback situation in flux. Who do you think are like the top three, top five teams you watch for this offseason?
I mean, I think the Colts are as high on that list as you could possibly get. because, I mean, they don't have a ton of draft capital, but they have above average, and they have the second most cap space. So, I mean, look, the Dolphins are going to be really interesting because I think that the Dolphins are kind of using a baseball team strategy. Looking at what the Browns did, looking at what the Astros did, the Houston Astros, obviously without the banging on trash cans. But, you know, trying to build from those bases and trying to, you know, gain a competitive advantage. I think the Colts or the Dolphins, what they did in their first year was awesome. I mean, they have three first round picks in an incredible draft. They signed up Devontae Parker, who had an awesome year for a very reasonable deal. They got an undrafted free agent rookie like Preston Williams, who was awesome before he got hurt. They can do whatever they want in the draft. They have the most cap space in the league. They're in a great position to grow. But the Colts, I think, you know, it's time to make a move, man. You know, it's time to make a move. We understand that they lost Andrew Luck. That sucks, you know. But, you know, they had their year where they were, what did they finish, like 7-9 or 6-10? I mean, they weren't, you know, they weren't very good at the end of the day. But, you know, we know that they have talent on both sides of the ball, certainly on the offensive line. And they dealt with a bunch of injuries. And now it's time for them to make a move. And I think that the people in the front office understand that as well. They have a lot of very smart decision makers, from Frank Reich to Chris Ballard to Matt Eberflus. I mean, you know, it's time for them to make a move.
Closing it out here with this final question, Evan. I know you're not a health expert. I'm not either. But with the coronavirus stuff going on, the NFL's obviously been impacted with scouts going off the road and stuff with pro days. And she's teams closing down their facilities at this point. How much is going to have an impact, this coronavirus pandemic, on maybe free agency itself or even the draft? It seems like it's going to have a big impact as far as maybe in person, but it might be more of a kind of thing we're doing now, just like a video conferencing for free agency and stuff.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, that's what it's going to be. I think that it is going to, I think that the draft is not going to be, you know, an event that a bunch of people are attending. I think it's mostly going to be done like over the internet. I think the same with free agency. I mean, we haven't even seen yet, you know, what it's going to be. It's, we're doing this on March 13th. And at the beginning, that negotiating window was supposed to start on March 16th in 3 days. And that's definitely not going to happen. We are starting to see some players get franchise tagged. We saw some guys get cut, and we'll probably see some more over the weekend. But, I think it's a very unpredictable situation. And I think that at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, we're not going to get a lot of times on guys that didn't work out at the combine. I think, you know, it just is what it is. I mean, it's for a greater good. You know, it's for a greater good. And so I'm not here complaining about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you there. And you guys can follow Evan on Twitter if you haven't already, at Evan Silva. Please go subscribe as well to Establish the Run. Awesome stuff you guys do on the podcast and on the written website. Evan, again, appreciate the time, man.
Evan, listen.